today is a very universally celebrated day. A lot of things happened today in this period. We have the Lord Krishna, of course. That was yesterday. Lord Krishna was bound by his mother yesterday. We celebrate. Lord Ram returned. And of course, yesterday, Nanda Maharaj, 5,300 years ago, was worshipping Indra. And today, Krishna lifted the hill. What a wonderful thing. In the Braj area, the region around, the big circle around Vrindavan, that's the Krishna's pastimes. Today, all the ladies, particularly ladies, will be making Krishna's out of mud and cow dung. And you make a Krishna about this long, out of mud and cow dung. And then you do puja. For a devotee, you can see Krishna even in mud. You can see Krishna in a tree. You can see Krishna everywhere. If your vision is Divya Drishta. Divya Drishta means you see the divine wherever you look. Like Prahlad Maharaj, he saw the divine everywhere he looked. Bahir Nrsingho, Hridaye Nrsingho, he's inside, outside. Yato, yato, yumitato, nrsingho. Wherever I look, I see the Lord. So when he was asked by his father, do you see your Lord, the source of all your power, inside this stone pillar? He said yes. And he wasn't lying, because he did. He saw the Lord there. Prabhupada says that when he looked at the pillar, he saw the Lord, and the Lord winked at him. And this was a particular pillar. This wasn't just any pillar. This was a very prized pillar, because on the pillar was carved all the heads of the people that Hiranyakashipu had defeated. It was his Vijay Stambha. It was his triumph pillar, his victory pillar. So surely, the person that was giving victory always to his son would not be seen inside that pillar. That's my pillar. I had that specially commissioned. It's got the heads of everybody that I've defeated. That very pillar represents my strength. How is it possible that you can see your Lord, that you say is greater than me, inside that pillar, which symbolizes the very power I have over everybody in the universe? How is that possible? But from that very pillar, out came the Lord, and you know the rest of the story. So in the same way, we see today a story of someone who thought that they were so powerful that they had the whole universe under them. And technically speaking, they did. Just as Hiranyakashipu technically had the whole universe under him. There was no one more powerful than Indra. Nobody more powerful than Indra. Now, the sad thing about Hiranyakashipu is that although Prahlad saw Krishna everywhere, even in places where you wouldn't imagine him to be, Hiranyakashipu couldn't even see Krishna, even when Krishna came in front of him. Even Krishna comes in front of you, if you're a demon, you won't see him. You see? So Hiranyakashipu's brother was the same, Hiranyaksha. He said, oh, a pig. When he saw Lord Varaha, he said, oh, a pig. What's the pig going to do? Well, the pig's going to kill you and cut you into pieces. So Hiranyakashipu, he said, oh, what's this? A man with a lion's head. What's he going to do? I'll finish him off in no time. But he was finished off. So Prahlad, because he was a devotee, he saw the Lord everywhere, even where the Lord was not. And Hiranyakashipu saw the Lord nowhere, even where the Lord was. And this is the difference between the devotee and the demon. And we, our situation is that we don't see the Lord, but somehow or another, we think there might be a remote possibility that he is everywhere, And we're trying, like anything, to see him everywhere. That's what we're doing. So on this day, we listened to a class about someone who also thought that no one is better than me, and even if he is, he's certainly not that little boy. Because that little boy is a boy. This is the mentality of the demon. When Shishupal saw Krishna, he didn't see Krishna. He saw someone who was subject to his criticism. Here's someone, he's a cowherd boy. He's a jumped up upstart. I heard about Krishna. He used to be a cowherd boy, and now he thinks he's a kshatriya. Well, I'm going to tell him a thing or two. I'm a kshatriya. My name is Shishupal, and I'm going to put him in his place. And 99 times, Shishupal, so-called, put Krishna in his place. You're this, you're that, you're this, you're that. And on the 100th time, Krishna said, I'm sorry. That's enough. Off with his head. So this was Shishupal. Krishna was right in front of him. He could not see Krishna. He could not see Krishna standing in front of him. He thought, oh, just an ordinary cowherd boy who thinks he's a kshatriya. Then, Ravana. He saw Sita. And he just thought, what a lovely woman. What a lovely woman means, she's for me. Because that's how he saw the whole universe. He saw himself as the center of the universe. If you see yourself as the center of the universe, everything and everyone around you is meant for you. I'll enjoy this, I'll have some of that, I'll have some of this, I'll have some of that. And you use everything and everyone in your devotional service. Because that's the purpose of the whole universe, to do devotional service to me. So, Ananda Shakti is meant to serve me. Okay? Ananda Shakti is meant to serve me. Back to Sean and Debbie, they're meant to serve him. Why? Because I'm the center of the universe. This is a demon. Prabhupada one time he said, demon is one who shouts into a microphone. He said, wherever you find the demons of this world, you will find a microphone and a big audience. So beware, those people who shout into microphones and sit on big cushions, it may not be what they think. So then, Ravana just saw, here's a woman, she can be enjoyed by me. He didn't know, no. This is Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. She's the very source of all the fortune that I already have. Talk about biting the hand that feeds you. If you don't know that Lakshmi is the source of all your good fortune, every single thing that you have, then when you come to Lakshmi, you'll think, I'll have her. So he thought that. Unfortunately, that is the opinion of a demon, and he had to be vanquished. These are all many, many other stories. We could go on. But Indra, we're talking about this demoniac mentality. Now, the story of Krishna lifting Govardhan downhill, there's sort of like four stages in the story. The first stage, you all know the story, so I'm not going to insult your intelligence by telling you the whole thing all over again. All right, I will. But the first stage is Krishna, he sort of convinces Nanda Maharaj not to do dharma, not to do ordinary religion. It's quite curious that sometimes Krishna is a very argumentative person. He can convince you using one argument, and then he can use a completely opposite argument to keep trying to convince you. Just like with Krishna and Arjuna. Krishna says to Arjuna, you're a kshatriya, therefore you should fight. Then later on, Krishna says, you're not a kshatriya, you're not a brahmin, you're a spirit soul. So Krishna uses a mundane argument to convince Arjuna. And then he says, you know, the reason you should fight on the battle of Kurukshetra is because if you don't, people will think you're a coward. Okay? Krishna is trying to use Arjuna's ego now. Okay? First a false designation, then Krishna is using his ego. And finally we get to the real argument. So, in his argument with Nanda Maharaj, Krishna uses different strategies. So after Nanda Maharaj is fully satisfied, then they take a different course of action. And then events begin to unfold. So this verse is at the point where things begin to change. Nanda Maharaj has changed his mind. Krishna has very effectively changed his mind. How old was he? Seven. Not very old, is it, to change your father's mind? So here we have this wonderful verse. Tasmad Javam Brahmananam. Tasmad Gavam Brahmananam. Tasmad Gavam Brahmananam. Adresh Charabhyatam Makaha. Adresh Charabhyatam Makaha. Adresh Charabhyatam Makaha. Ya Indra Yaga Sambaras. Ya Indra Yaga Sambaras. Ya Indra Yaga Sambaras. Tae Ayam Sadhyatam Makaha. Tae Ayam Sadhyatam Makaha. Tairayam Sadhyatam Makaha. This is actually a happy celebratory verse, so we have to match it with the tune. Tasmad Gavam Brahmananam. Adreshcharabhyatam Makaha. Ya Indra Yaga Sambara. Sadhyatam Makaha. Tasmad Gavam Brahmananam. Adreshcharabhyatam Makaha. Ya Indra Yaga Sambaras. Tairayam Sadhyatam Makaha. Tasmad Gavam Brahmananam. Adreshcharabhyatam Makaha. Ya Indra Yaga Sambaras. Tairayam Sadhyatam Makaha. Tasmad Gavam Brahmananam. Ya Indra Yaga Sambaras. yadam nakah. Tasmat. Therefore, gavam of the cows. Brahmananam of the Brahmins. Adre of the hill. Gordam. Cha also. Arabyatam. Let it begin. Maka sacrifice. Ye which Indrayaga for the sacrifice to Indra. Sambara the ingredients. Tai by them. Ayam this. Sadyatam may it be carried out. Makaha the sacrifice. Translation. Therefore may a sacrifice for the pleasure of the cows, the Brahmins, and Govardhan Hill begin. With all the paraphernalia collected for worshipping Indra, let this sacrifice be performed instead. Please repeat very loudly, lift the roof of this tent. No, you don't have to, I just thought it was something I should say, being in a tent. Therefore, may a sacrifice for the pleasure of the cows, the Brahmins, and Govardhan Hill. Take your right hand. Okay. It's got an exclamation mark, and we say, begin!
Begin.
With all the paraphernalia collected for worshipping Indra, let this sacrifice be performed instead. Purport. Lord Krishna is famous as Govardhana Hita, the well-wishing friend of the cows and the Brahmanas. Lord Krishna specifically included the local Brahmanas in his proposal because he's always devoted to those who are devoted to the godly Vedic culture. There are many festivals that Srila Prabhupada introduced. He said, if you have time, I can give you a festival every weekend. And he was very pleased when devotees celebrated festivals. What is a festival? When we say, please come to our festival, what are we doing? Well, on our festival, we're having kirtan. Okay. We're reading from classes. Okay. We're having theater. Okay. Isn't that what you do every day? Yes. But tomorrow is designated as a festival. It's different. Okay, well, why is it different? Well, because on a festival day, we focus completely on one of the activities of the Lord, one of the leelas of the Lord, through which we achieve something called anugraha. Anugraha means grace. There's special grace to be achieved. And often the anugraha comes in the form of a phala shruti. Phala shruti is at the end of a particular recitation of the Lord's pastimes. And this phala, the fruit, shruti, of hearing, phala shruti means, if you listen to the story, you will get blessings. If you listen to this, it's an inducement for us. If you sit and listen to the story, you will get blessings, the phala shruti. And it's not just an inducement, it's not just a false inducement. You will get blessings. Why? Because Krishna performs these different activities, these different leelas, so that they will be talked about. He wants you to, in 2012, Krishna wants you to talk about him lifting Govardhan Hill. Because you may need it. There's a lot of atheists around. Of course, if it's the end of the world in 2012, then you'll definitely need Govardhan Leela. You'll need somewhere to go for shelter. Don't worry. A lot of worried looking. Won't happen. But it'll happen someday. Unfortunately, sometimes people come to us and they say, do you think the end of the world is coming? I say, yes. And they go, oh, really? When is the end of the world? I say, well, we have 427,000 years left. At the end of this microphone. So get ready. And they said, you're kidding. No, I said, get ready. 427,000 years isn't long. So the end of the world is coming. In the 1970s, we used to go on Harinam in London, as we always do, on a Saturday night in Leicester Square. And there was always a group of Christians. It was something they did in the 50s and 60s and the 70s. I don't see it now anymore. But they used to have a sign that said, the end of the world is nigh. The end of the world is nigh. The end of the world is coming. Unfortunately, they all died. They all died. And the Harinam party still goes to Leicester Square. And I don't think that people, they may say it in different sophisticated ways. But if and when the end of the world comes, you need Krishna. If the end of the world does not come, you need Krishna. And for anything in between, you need Krishna. Because Krishna is the only shelter. Shri Krishna, Sharanam, Mama. You need Krishna. He is the only shelter. And in this Govardhan Leela, particularly, he wants to show us how he shelters everyone. How he's the shelter for the entire universe. Of course, these things are hinted at in the Upanishads, but they're demonstrated in Krishna Leela. In the Upanishad, in the Shriyash Upanishad, which Prabhupada gave to us, we find the sort of, it's a, you know, it's a puzzle that needs to be unwrapped. Tadejati, tannaijati. He walks, but he does not walk. Tadure, tadvantike. He's very far away, but he's very close to you. I wonder, who could they be talking about? Tarantarasya, sarvasya. He's outside of you, he's inside of you. What are they talking about? Tarantarasya, sarvasya, taru sarvasya, sivayatara. I was thinking another verse. No. Aneja ekam masojviyo, naina daivam apnuvam purvam arshat. Tadavato nyan atyeti tishtar tasmin apo matrishvadadati. Matrishvadadati says that this person that I'm talking about, the one who's inside you, outside of you, who's very, very far away from you, so far away you can't touch him, very close to you, so close to you you don't even know he's there, he's inside of you, he's outside of you. This person is matrishvadadati. What does that mean? Matrishva means the person who gives rain. The person who gives rain. He's above the person who gives rain. I wonder who that could be. But the Upanishads don't tell us. They just tell. The Upanishads are meant for Upanishad. Upanishad means bringing you closer. Upanishad means, come and sit down. I want to tell you something. I want to tell you a secret. Upanishad. It's a guhya shastra. It's a secret. I want to tell you a secret now. There is someone above the rain god. There is someone who is so far away, you'll never ever be able to get, but he's very close. This is a secret. Don't tell everybody. Okay, it's meant for you. This is a secret. Because not everybody can appreciate this. You see. But it's not explicit. You see. But when we get to the Mundaka Upanishad and the Svetashvatara Upanishad, we find something. Let me tell you a story. I'll tell you a story. Shall I? Tell you a story. Let me tell you a story of two golden birds. These two golden birds are sitting in a tree, and one golden bird is eating the fruit of the tree. And sometimes the fruit of the tree is bitter, and sometimes the fruit of the tree is sweet. And the other golden bird is above him, sitting in another branch. And the bird who's constantly pecking never turns around. He has a relationship with this other bird, but he doesn't know it. I wonder who they're talking about. It doesn't say. The Upanishads do not say these things. The Chandogya Upanishad. It says, I'll tell you another story. Tell you another story. Once upon a time there was a man from Kandahar. Kandahar is now a place in Afghanistan. It used to be part of India in the 1600s. I'll tell you a story of a man from Kandahar. One time this man from Kandahar, he was stolen by robbers, dumped in the desert, blindfolded, tied up, and sent to sleep, drugged, sent to sleep. He woke up after a long time in the blazing sun. And he immediately began to weep. He said, "Oh, where am I? Where have they left me? I feel by the sand beneath my feet that I'm in the desert. Where can I go? How can I reach my beloved city? I cannot go this way because there might be wolves roaming in the desert. I cannot go this way because I might fall down a hill. Where is my home? I cannot find my home." And then a friendly traveler came and took off his blindfold, cut him free, and the man was allowed to go home. Where is home? The Upanishad does not say. The Upanishads are meant for bringing you closer. Just like the devotee in the temple. He says, oh, they say, oh, there's no class today? They say, no, we're having class in the tent. And the person says, so where's the tent? And he goes, oh, it's over that way somewhere. Okay, there's five tents here today. There's five tents. He just says, it's a white one. Well, that doesn't really help me. But his finger is pointing somewhere. So in the general direction. So Upanishad is a finger pointing. It's pointing in the general direction. So the Vedanta Sutra borrows from the Upanishads and brings us closer. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the fulfillment, it is the purport of Vedanta Sutra. So in these texts, we find Krishna displaying himself and showing exactly how he is above Mahaparishvara. So he's using some very clever arguments with Nanda Baba, his father, because he's saying, why are you worshipping Indra? You know the story. He said, Father, you're preparing. See, on the Diwali day, you're supposed to worship those things that bring fortune into your life. If you're a businessman, you worship your accounting books. Not because it's not book worship. Please don't think that it's book worship. Or if you're a pianist, I've seen this in India. People will do puja to the piano, or they'll do puja to, if he's a taxi driver, he'll splash his car all over with sandalwood paste and juice from melons, and have the Brahmin make swastika signs and bless his vehicle. Please don't think that this is just some pagan idea. It's not a pagan idea. It's not the best idea, but it's not a pagan idea. The idea is that God has given you these instruments, and God can take them away. God has given you fortune, and God can take the fortune away. So even if for 364 days of the year, you don't do very much, on this day, let everybody in their occupation worship that person or thing which is an emblem of God's grace. So therefore, even in our ISKCON Tirupati has a fleet of rickshaws and food for life vans and devotee transport vehicles and sankirtan vehicles, and they have a big car park opposite the temple. So early in the morning, about 6 o'clock, ISKCON Tirupati is on the move. Every single vehicle, all the sankirtan vehicles, all the taxis, all the rickshaws, all the food for life, all the pots and pans that they use, it's all lined up in the sunshine. And because it's India, the sunshine is shining by 6 o'clock. Hooray! So, it costs a lot to live in this country, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It costs an awful lot to live in this country. I read in the Bhagavatam of how people would leave home and just go traveling and eat fruits, and I think, that's very nice. But it was hot. It was hot. They don't pay for central heating. Look, we're sitting in a tent. The heaters, it costs a lot of money just to keep the cold away. Our culture is for a warmer climate. That's why we wear these dhotis. These dhotis are not fit for purpose in the United Kingdom. Has no one ever told you? You fools. Not only that, in Sweden they wear these. Sometimes they go out on sankirtan in the snow, in a dhoti. Okay. Sorry. Calm down. So everything is lined up, and they do a puja, just a quick puja, 15 minutes, and they smashing of coconuts and smashing of melons and splashing of sandalwood paste. Why? Because these are Krishna's taxis, Krishna's rickshaws, Krishna's sankirtan bands. Therefore, because they belong to Krishna, therefore they're worshipable. So people see that which has been given to them by God or gods as worshipable. And don't laugh, because before the battle of Kurukshetra, if you read your Mahabharata, which I hope you do, you will find that Arjuna did puja. He did puja to the weapons, the knives, the swords, the bayonets, the bows, the arrows. They did puja. Bathed them in milk. Some in lemon juice. Threw flowers, sandalwood paste. These are the very things which were going to win the war or not. Some years ago, we used to go to the Glastonbury Festival. Our devotees were some of the first. I can remember the Glastonbury Festival when it was 200 people. 200 people. I can remember doing a fire sacrifice right in the middle of Stonehenge, right on the altar in Stonehenge. They don't let you do that now. But Michael Ebus, before he does the whole Glastonbury Festival, when he has a new stage, or when they've done some new construction for the stage, he brings cow's milk and he bathes the stage in milk and does a little puja. I bet you didn't know that. So this whole idea has to be understood very carefully. Okay, here comes the philosophical bit. The philosophical bit is, those who believe that a tree is a god are known as a pantheist. Okay? That's one word. Write it down. If this was a Buddhist group of modern, young, Western converts to Buddhism, you'd all have a pen and a paper. But because it's our devotees, and you think that there's someone going to be along tomorrow giving the same talk, we don't take notes. Okay? Don't take notes means you forget. Okay? Pantheist. Okay. Got that? Ramachandra is writing down. A person who understands that there is a higher force behind the tree, which is nonetheless sacred, the river, which is nonetheless sacred, the mountain, which is nonetheless sacred, is known as a panentheist. A panentheist. So there is a difference. What's the difference? Okay. Anybody know the difference? Put up your hand if you know the difference. Oh dear. Ramana Shringa, will you please tell us what the difference is? Nice and loud so everybody can hear. Yes. Yes. Thank you very much. Round of applause, please, for Ramana Shringa. He has a very active mind, I can tell you. And that's why he's still in Krishna consciousness after about 60 years he's been a devotee. 60 years of devotee. He was a devotee even before Prabhupada came to America. And he's been sitting in Bhagavatam class for all that time. You will always see him sitting in Bhagavatam class making notes. Not only does he make notes, but he makes use of notes. So Krishna, he begins to tell. So here's Nanda Maharaj, and he's worshipping Indra. Why Indra? Because from Indra comes the rain. Now, I don't know. Put up your hand if you occasionally use Facebook. Just occasionally, obviously. Never.
No, not occasionally, always.
Oh, not occasionally, always. Okay. Who always uses Facebook? Okay, someone sent around a picture the other day. And it was of Hurricane Sandy battering an SUV on the coast. It was a pickup truck. And someone had put a thing that said, this pickup truck is not being battered by an angry deity. This pickup truck is being battered by the results of climate change? And I wrote back, no. This pickup truck is being battered by an angry deity who doesn't like pickup trucks. Anyway, the point is, people like to think that these are simply forces of nature. They're simply forces of nature. And they think that that is a better vision of reality to have. Now, it is a force of nature, but we must understand who is behind the force of nature. There are two causes of everything. There are two causes of everything. The first cause is, for instance, in this example, the first cause is, the first cause is I slip on a banana skin. Okay, what caused my fall down? Okay, what caused my fall down? The banana skin. But is that it? The banana skin was the final point of a story. And what is the beginning of the story? The beginning of the story is someone dropped a banana skin. I was on the underground yesterday, sitting opposite a young lad. He finished off his drink, very neatly screwed the top back on the bottle, and then threw it behind him. This is how you treat public transport. You don't throw your rubbish behind you. So, I was going to say something, but I have to restrain myself sometimes. So, yes, people drop litter. So that is the remote cause. The banana skin is the immediate cause of my falling down. Someone dropping the banana skin is the remote cause. And there's a remote cause behind that. The remote cause is the shopkeeper who sold the banana to the person who dropped the banana skin. You see. So if you see just the immediate cause and you don't see the remote cause or remote causes or the cause of the remote causes, you're not seeing the complete picture. So as philosophers, we're dealing with remote causes. We have to deal with remote causes. Unfortunately, thinkers, even great thinkers in modern society, they just deal with immediate causes. So yes, Hurricane Sandy that just ravaged the east coast of America is caused by climate change. That's fine. But what causes climate change? Okay, it's rampant consumerism. Rampant consumerism. So what causes rampant consumerism? It's something else. There's a cause. Ultimately, the cause of all causes is a material perspective on the world. That I can gain happiness through sense gratification or any kind of mundane achievement. That will give me happiness. No, 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 say the yogis. No, no, say the rishis and the sages. You are just like the musk deer, who secretes a beautiful perfume from its navel every mating season. See, during the mating season, sometimes it's the ladies that dress up very nicely. But in nature, often it's the men that get dressed up. The peacock is the male. He has a beautiful, you see a peahen, she's not got a very nice feathered sari. It's the man. So it's the musk ox. He secretes a beautiful perfume from his navel. And he smells it himself. And he thinks it's very nice, but he doesn't know where it's coming from. So he thinks that it's coming from the other side of the field. So he runs over to the other side of the field. And in the springtime, in the mating season, you can see all these little musk oxes. They're only about this big. Cute little things. Very nice smell in India. And they were running. And one of them is running from one side of the field to the other, and the other is running from the other. So they're all running. They're all running. Like this darting here and there. So the yogis, when they saw this in the mountains, they see, actually, this is human life. You don't know that the sweet smell, the sweet fragrance, the thing that you're really looking for, is coming from deep within you. You think that it's always coming from somewhere else. So this is materialism. Materialist thinks, I had something yesterday, I lost it. I need something more today. If I work hard today, I will get something in the future. This is what I want. And there's always something else. There's always something else. And even when you get the something else, there's something else. And usually when you get the something else and you get so disappointed that the something else wasn't better something than the something that you had before, then you have something else to drown your sorrows. And then you begin a cycle of self-deprecation, self-inflicted misery, a downward spiral of excess gratification that results in despondency, despair, and sometimes suicide. Even while we are sitting here today, one person, two people will have committed suicide, and one person will be under the age of 18. It's a sad fact that in the United Kingdom, so many people are taking their lives because they see no hope. Hope means that you're spiritually dead. Prabhupada said this Krishna consciousness movement is to give hope. Hope means that happiness is possible. Satisfaction is possible. Love is possible. I have a bright future. It's not always going to be like this. There is an end to my misery. I do have friends who will help me. And many people cannot see themselves in that space. So this Krishna consciousness movement is performing a very valuable function, giving people hope. Before I became a devotee, I used to be unhappy. As soon as I became a devotee, I started meeting with the devotee, I became happy. That for me is a very clear-cut division. A few years ago, I became very sick, and I became in the restorative process while my body was healing itself. My body was just traumatized by the very nasty operation that I had. But it was a life-saving operation that I had to have. But I became physically depressed. I never experienced depression in my life. And one day, in the middle of this depression, I thought, I can't take this anymore. Because from my perspective, I had no friends, the devotees were just not interested, life had crumbled all around me, I had nothing, and there was nothing to live for. Luckily, at that point, I thought, I'm going to finish this. I'm going to end this. This is Kripa Moya Das, Prabhupada's disciple, everything to live for. And here I was, just staring at the ceiling, thinking to myself, it's over. I can't go on like this. And then a voice said to me, just wait till tomorrow. Wait till tomorrow. We'll be all right tomorrow. And so I waited till tomorrow. And then it was a little bit better. And now it's much better. Thank you very much for asking. But I had that experience, I think, to bring me closer to people who have that experience, which is an experience that many people have just before they take to spiritual life. If you've never had that experience, it's impossible to conceive of how a person can be so unhappy that they can be suicidal. Impossible. But through physical circumstances, through sickness, it can happen. Through very violent trauma within the family or within one's relationships, it can happen. Every single day, there's 300 meals coming from our kitchen here distributed to the homeless in London. And when our devotees who go to give food to the homeless people, they don't find that the homeless people are hopeless. They just find that they're going through some traumatic episode. And sometimes they've been very successful people. But everything has just come all at one time in their life. Their partner has left them. Their kids have left home. Because usually people, they live for others. So when your children leave home, people get depressed. When the wife dies, when the husband dies, people get very depressed. Now, what can I do in my life? My life only had meaning when my wife was alive. My life only had meaning when my husband was here. Now he's gone. There's nothing in my life anymore. And that is the time when we most need to be reassured of hope. So Krishna consciousness gives hope. I'm absolutely convinced of that. That was my mini sermon inside my narrative. I just want you to say that. Because if you think that sometimes in our life as devotees, we're going through a very dry patch, and we can't even think of sharing what we do in our life with others. You know, why would I want to give Krishna consciousness to others? I'm struggling so much with it myself. I'm not even sure what I believe. I'm not even sure whether I like chanting Hare Krishna all the time. I'm not even sure whether I really appreciate everything that Prabhupada said. You know, could it be true? I mean, I've seen some things on the internet, you know. And the whole of our movement closes down because you closed down, and there's a lot of other devotees like you. Everything closes down, and no one wants to share Krishna consciousness with others because just for a few moments they give up hope. That's the point where you need friends. That's the point where you need devotees. And that's the point where you need true friendship. And true friendship is where devotees say to you, Prabhuji, you look a little bit unhappy today. Is there something that I can help you with? Otherwise, where have all the Vaishnavas gone? Where have all the Vaishnavas gone? Where are they? I mean, I'm here, Sudhabhava's still here, Ramanashringa's still here, we're still here, some people are still here, but look at the empty chairs. Look at the empty chairs. There are so many who weren't here 5 years. 5 years ago, there was other faces. 10 years ago, there was other faces. 20, I can remember 35 years ago, I was at Bhaktivedanta Nanda 35 years ago. Where have they gone? But they've gone. People join something because it gives them hope, and they leave something when they lose hope. It's a very simple equation. So, we have to be hope givers. We have to be hope experiencers, first of all. We have to be radical practitioners of Krishna consciousness, otherwise it doesn't work. Just like that airplane trying to take off. I was in such an airplane once. It was trying to take off. It couldn't. It was too heavy. 350 devotees had weighed it down with brass. We begged and begged, even paid dunderbucks to the check-in staff at Calcutta Airport. Please, we're just trying to take your culture to the West. Please let us take these sacks of brass musical instruments on board the plane. But when 350 devotees do that, the plane is too heavy to take off, so this was a jumbo jet going down the runway, desperately trying to take off at the required speed. The captain couldn't get it up. He said, I have to go. And he went back, and he had to make another try to take off at the runway. And eventually, he got it up. Hooray! And the Hare Krishna movement had cartels for another 3 years before everybody stole them from our temples. Where have all the cartels gone? They've stolen everyone. Where is the? Why are Hare Krishna movement temples so free from cartels? Okay, what happens? People think they won't notice. It's just me, after all. You see, but you think it's just me. I don't need to preach. It's just me. They won't notice. The Hare Krishna movement is very big now. It's a big organization. They've got everything. Oh, so many people giving money. It's so rich. They don't need my money. They don't need me selling books. They've got so many people selling books. They don't need cooks. They don't. Well, we don't need you for anything then. So you're useless to the Hare Krishna movement. The next thing that you'll convince yourself is that you are useless, and Krishna doesn't need you. Krishna doesn't need me because he's got all these wonderful other people doing things for him. The point is that Krishna needs you. Krishna means every single devotee. Anyway, that is my belief. So Krishna convinces Nanda Baba. He says, Father, why are you worshipping Indra? What's the point? Why are you worshipping Indra? He says, the rain is falling everywhere. The rain falls even on the ocean. And what's the point of that? If Indra was a kind, loving God who sends rains, especially for your cows, such that you should be grateful, you may get some water. He says, look at what happens. There's a condensation. Here's how it happens. This is the argument that Krishna gives to Nandabala, okay? We have hot air rising up to the cold air. It condenses and forms a little cloud and then falls down as rain. So during this class, some of you will get little drops of water on your head. And this is exactly the argument that Krishna gives to Nanda Maharaj. He says, it's just forces of nature. You know, the ocean evaporates because of the sun, creates a cloud. But while the cloud is coming over to Vrindavan, the cloud actually rains in the desert to no effect. The cloud rains on a lake or on the sea to no effect. So this kind, munificent God that you're praying to, it's arbitrary whether he's kind and beneficent at all, because it rains everywhere. So Krishna uses an atheistic argument on Nanda Maharaj. He uses an atheistic argument. And this is God himself preaching atheism. Why? Because he wants to, first of all, destroy Nanda Maharaj's attachment to worshipping Indra, and he wants to replace this worship with worship of Gobradhan Hill. And then Krishna declares himself to be non-different from Gobradhan Hill. Go Vardhan. Go, the Sanskrit word go, means that which is led, that which is pulled. So you pull a cow along, the cow is led along by grass. So the senses are also pulled along. So that is sometimes why we say the land is also pulled by a plow. That's why sometimes when you see the word go in Sanskrit, if Sanskrit is such an exact language, why does go, the word go, mean hill, cow, land, and senses? What's the relationship between those three? Tell me that, Mr. Sanskrit expert. Well, actually, go means that which is led. So there's an etymological link between all those words. So Krishna convinces his father, and then we come to this verse, tasma, therefore. Therefore means it's a juncture. Means because of all this, this happens. And they have a wonderful celebration. And all the items that were for Indra, they are used for worshipping Gobradhan Hill. Because Gobradhan Hill is the immediate cause of the cows getting all the grass that they need. Now, this atheistic argument has caused Nanda Maharaj to turn from the remote cause, Indra, to the immediate cause, grass. And basically, Gobradhan Hill is full of grass. Now it's full of stones, but then it was full of grass and trees and waterfalls and animals, including snakes. Now it is something different. So he said, this atheistic argument brings him from remote cause to immediate cause. But there's a great celebration. I saw a painting yesterday of circumambulation of Gobradhan Hill. Now, put your hand up if you've circumambulated Gobradhan Hill. Wow. Great devotees of Gobradhan. Great devotees. It's quite a long way, isn't it? Did you do it barefoot? It's quite a long way. Very long way, actually, especially the last quarter. I did it with Shivaram Swami, so we had to do it at quite a pace. And we chanted 64 rounds. But you have time to. But it's still got miles and miles and miles of sand and heat. And in our case, beautiful recitations. People go around by bowing down, all kinds of manners. And what they'll be doing today, what they started off doing a few hours ago, in Gauranga, in India, is that they many people go with a bicycle, not riding the bicycle, but they use the bicycle, and on the back of the bicycle is a milk churn. And in the milk churn is a hole. And the hole gradually releases a stream of milk, and as they walk around, they're bathing Gauranga Hill in milk for how many miles? 9 miles? 14 miles? There's two routes, isn't there? Huh? 14? I can't work out the kilometers. 14 kilometers? 24. Okay. That's long. I know it's long. But they bathe Gauranga in milk. And then there are different places also where there is where Krishna is said to have lifted up Gauranga Hill. And they bathe that also in milk. So Indra, as you know, became very very angry. He became very angry because he was denied his particular sacrifice. And sometimes these things are arranged by Krishna. Were there not other places that Krishna, Indra could have become angry at? Yes. But the point is that this particular leela had to take place. It's a leela that had to take place. Not only to put Indra in his place, but to show all of us the cycle of lust, you could say, the cycle of desire. Cycle of desire is, I want, and when I want, I place myself in the center and I forget God. When I forget God, the natural consequences are that the thing that I wanted, I will be thwarted, my enjoyment will be thwarted. And then afterwards I shall have to seek forgiveness. So this is what happens. This is what happens. Krishna is the refuge of all. And at the conclusion of the sacrifice that was made to Gauranga Hill, then the rains begin. It's too close to be a coincidence. And actually, as the rains begin, they're not ordinary rains. We discover that Indra is, the Matreshwar Indra is sending the Samvartaka. Samvartaka cloud means the cloud that comes at the end of the world. We find huge chunks of ice. Even today, you can read accounts from America, mainly in America, where they have really bad weather. You see, they should worship Krishna more. They have huge hailstones like this. Sometimes they have winds that are so strong that it picks up an entire car or a cow and deposits the cow. There have been stories that cows have been deposited 4 miles away from where they started. Huge winds. So if you've never seen this storm, who's really been in a violent storm that you really got worried? Rabindra Das Brahmachari, where is that storm? Where was it? North of Scotland. North of Scotland, yeah. Who else has been in a violent storm? Ananta Shakti.
Coming across the English Channel in a small boat, and a boat that could take about a dozen people, and we ran into a force 8 gale, and was just thrown from one side to the boat.
Ananta Shakti says that he was on the English Channel in a boat that was designed for 12 people, and they ran into a force 8 gale, and the boat was rocking so violently that they were thrown from one side of the boat to the other. In England, we have very moderate climate. You don't understand, it's very, very moderated here. We get a lot of rain, but we don't get very, very, very powerful rain. In 1987, we had a very powerful storm, and we lost 15 million trees in this country. 15 million trees. No one even believed that England could get such a storm. In America they have worse, and in other countries, very, very bad. I was in Mayapur in the springtime, and there was such a violent storm. The lightning and thunder were just overhead, and the bangs were so loud, so loud. I mean, I the lightning was so bright, I actually thought that this is it. Something's going to happen. You know, I went from sort of childish glee, oh, a thunderstorm, lightning, to, oh my God. How is this possible? But luckily it was my fault, so I had, you know, my faith was a little bit restored. And the storm passed. And in the morning we saw all the crops were smashed, everything was, you know, thrown from one side to the other. It was very, very violent. So if you've never been in that, you can't quite imagine what the residents of Vrindavan were experiencing. So when it was that bad, they only had one recourse. They went to Krishna. You know, the thing is, the residents of Vrindavan don't really care that Krishna is God. That's the thing. There's two types of people that don't care for Krishna being God. One is the demons, because they don't actually want God to exist at all. So even when presented with Krishna, they don't respond. But the devotees of Vrindavan, they love Krishna so much that they don't know that he's God. Their love is so strong that it gets in the way of the philosophy. Only people who struggle to understand Krishna and struggle to love Krishna need philosophy. That's all of us. We need philosophy. On Tuesday, we need philosophy to remind us that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when we wake up on Wednesday, we need another bucket load of philosophy to convince us once again. Why? Because we're so stuck in our ways. So stuck in our ways. We kind of theoretically accepted that Krishna is the Supreme Person. But if I sleep tonight, maybe when I wake up in the morning, it won't be true. Us people, we need philosophy constantly. Philosophy, theology, argumentation, reasoning. Hard knocks in the school of life. But the residents of Vrindavan, they love Krishna so much, they don't even know who he is. That's the thing, they just think he's their darling boy. You see, that love has covered them completely. So they went to Krishna because they love him. And they say, we're not actually sure whether you can do anything or not about the rain, but can you? Is that possible? We've seen you do some amazing things before. Is there anything that you can help us with? So immediately Krishna lifted up the entirety of this huge hill, mountain, on the small finger of his left hand. The weakest part of any lifting hand that he had. Just the small finger of his left hand. Yes, all the children in the audience should now do that. And all the adults can follow them. You can just lift your hand. With your little finger, this is how Krishna. How much strength is there in your little finger? Not a great deal. But Krishna has all strength in every limb. All strength in every finger. So he lifted this hill. And everyone came in and sheltered underneath. And Krishna held the hill above him for 7 days. 7 days. Not only 7 days, but 7 nights. And they were looking at him and they were thinking, how is it possible that this child of 7 can do this? And what was their response? Their response was, you know, we should help him. So there's that famous picture of the residents and Vrijvasis with their bamboo poles holding up the hill, helping Krishna lift up the hill. Because after all, he's only a boy. How can he possibly keep it? Well, he's lifted it in the first place. What do you think your bamboo pole is going to do? But they felt like this. They felt protective towards him. This is the Vatsalya Ras. They want to protect him. Vatsala means like a calf. Vatsala means calf. So Vatsalya means the rasa where you are protected as parent or child. So the cows and the calves were there. Cowherd men, cowherd ladies, all the children. And Krishna was the focus of everyone's attention and everyone's love. And if we just hold that picture within our mind of this beautiful boy holding this huge hill above him and everybody inside, we could finish the story there. We could actually finish the story there. There's no need to, you know, this is the way we like to see Giridhara. This is the way we like to see Krishna. Caught in the middle of the Leela. When we talk about Kaliya Krishna, he's sort of freeze-framed, dancing on Kaliya. Giriraj Dharana Krishna, he's freeze-framed, holding the hill. But that's the high point. That's the high point. Krishna then sets down the hill, and it's time for Indra to learn the best lesson that anyone can learn in life. Lord Ramachandra said, to go to the supreme abode, he said, the gate that opens your possibility to go to the supreme abode is called the gate marked pride. He said, if you can become free from pride, he said, then you can go through that gate to Vaikuntha. So becoming free from pride is the great blessing. Therefore, humility is what is taught. If someone says to you, what do they teach you in the Krishna consciousness movement? You can say, we learn how to be humble. That's actually our prized possession. Not being humble doesn't mean I'm learning how to be humiliated. No. They're related words, but completely different. To experience humility means to have recognition yourself of how small you are. It runs counter to all Western psychological thought. Western psychological thought places you in the center, and your self-esteem, self-respect, and your power. You know, people like to be told, I came away and I felt empowered. You know, I went to the Tony Robbins seminar and he stood on stage and I was with 4,000 people and we were all jumping and we were all thinking, yeah, I can do it. I felt so empowered. Okay, how did you feel when you left the auditorium? It was okay. So empowerment has got nothing to do with someone telling you that you're big, you're strong, you're powerful, you're beautiful. Actually, empowerment has got a lot to do with someone telling you, you're none of these things. But Western psychological thought says, no, don't do that. Don't let anybody ever tell you that you're not this or you're not that. Don't let them do that to you. If you let people do that to you, you're being humiliated. Your natural self-respect and self-esteem and self-pride is all being taken away. Don't let any guru or lama or yogi or teacher or priest ever do that to you. This is Western psychology. However, Eastern psychology says, no, I'm sorry, it's not like that. In our understanding, the soul is the source of all power. Not the body, not the mind, and not the designations that one may fix upon the body and the mind. Because these are all temporary. However, the power of the soul is permanent, everlasting, eternal. So when you, through humility, through understanding, I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not this, you come to who you really are, the power, then you experience real power. That's why the really powerful people that have changed the world have been the most spiritual people. Muhammad, very spiritual person, changed the world. Jesus Christ, very spiritual person. We remember him every year at Christmas. I don't think that they're going to remember your birthday every year. They're not. They remember Jesus' birthday. Why? Very spiritual person. And what did he say? He said, you're not this, you're not this, you're not this, you're not this. You have to become very, very small and lose that power to enter the kingdom of God. Who else? Lord Buddha. He said many things to become free from ego. So the really, truly, spiritually powerful people are the people who have said, who could stand up in an assembly and say, actually, I'm nothing, but they actually meant it. Now, when you say, I am nothing, but you don't mean it, or you stand up in an assembly and someone tells you, you are nothing, but you don't want to hear that information, that's humiliation. Then you're being humiliated. When you actually want to know what you're not and what you are, and someone in an assembly says, you're not this, you're not that, this is who you are, which is when the guru speaks, then the disciple thinks, this is my prize. This is, I today have become humbled and I've come closer to my true, authentic self. In Western psychology, someone says your authentic self is, you know, you stripped of your negative emotions. In Eastern psychology, we say your true, authentic self is the spiritual essence. That is you. Stripped of all the negative emotions of this life, the past life, and all the other lives. And that's the difference. That's the difference. So, we have to be very careful that it is not our duty to become proud in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, when life sends you a banana skin, and you fall over, you have to get up and you have to carry on. Because that banana skin was probably meant to bring down your pride just a little. And when it happens regularly, you think, oh, I must be doing something right. I must be doing something right. Because only when you're completely emptied, only when you've completely died to your old self, can you regain your new self. It's a completely emptying out. So this, Prabhupada said this is what the guru does. He says, one time they asked him, what is initiation? He said it is suicide of the ego. Suicide of the ego. Becoming free from everything that you think you are. Now, in order for you to do that, you have to place yourself in a situation where, by a process of logical analysis, you come to the conclusion that what is written in the Upanishads is correct, what is written in Vedanta Sutra is correct, what is written in Bhagavatam and Gita is correct, and then I must take that forward. Okay? You're working with the assumption that everything in there is correct. So once you come to that point, then the fireworks begin. And every firework has a light the blue touch paper. When you light the blue touch paper, and only when you light the blue touch paper, that's when you get the firework. Okay? So up until that point, you're deciding where to put the firework, striking the match, walking towards it, backing up. But when you actually lit it, that's when it actually begins. So the point at which you say, I think that this is true and I'm prepared to work with this conception in my life and to see what spiritual benefit I will achieve, that's the point where you really begin your spiritual life. And from that point, the fireworks begin. That's the point where you lose your old self. A firework becomes a true firework, but in the process of being a very splendid thing, it loses some of the old stuff. It loses the gunpowder. Loses all the old explosive stuff in order to become, you know, what it was truly meant to be. Here's the difficulty. Often in spiritual life, we come to a point where we think, I came to spiritual life because of a logical series of analyses that brought me closer, 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 closer to reality, to spiritual reality. Do you know? What is the time?
Quarter past nine.
You know, you should stand at the back with a sign saying, please, please stop. Or one that says, how long have you liked the sound of your own voice? Please don't subject us to it. And that might be my banana skin today. So often we place our lingering pride is in our rational analysis. And we think, you know, I came to Krishna consciousness as a process of I wasn't desperate. I didn't have to join a religious movement to feel good about myself. I wasn't miserable. I wasn't suicidal. You know, I came because I'm a pretty, you know, philosophical thinker. In fact, I'm pretty intelligent. And, you know, it's only because I'm very, very intelligent that I could understand that I wanted to follow the Bhagavatam in the first place. Now, using my great intelligence, I've decided that the Krishna consciousness movement is no longer something I'd like to be a part of. And the point is, having pride in that form of intelligence is unhelpful. That will take you out as quickly as you came in. So the crossover point is where you allow your material rationale to be supplanted by a transcendental rationale that may not always appeal to the intelligence. I'm sitting here, and someone who's apparently intelligent, they put him up on a big cushion, says that God came down and God was a little boy and lifted a huge mountain with the little finger of his left hand. I'm hearing it, I don't believe it, but I'm willing to go along with it for the time being. And let me see if they can later on prove it. We can only do that for a little while. And then eventually you have to come to the point of sharanam. You have to take shelter, you have to take shelter. Which means, taking shelter means, I surrender to the superior intelligence which may be displayed by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Because I cannot work this out myself. I can't work it out. But I know that if this is true and that's true, and I've already proved to myself that this is true, then these apparently illogical statements about the behavior of God in the world may also be true. Let me work with that assumption. But holding on to let me work with that assumption means that you're safeguarding your actual taking shelter. So taking shelter is to hell with my mundane calculation, to hell with my mundane intelligence. It's keeping me trapped in an international society for Krishna coziness, not an international society for Krishna consciousness. Don't get cozy. If you get cozy, you'll just, you know, cozy means cruising. You can only cruise for so long. You have to keep moving forward. So to come to the level of intellectual and analytical satisfaction, that's one level. But to push beyond that boundary and allow Krishna to direct our intelligence, that's something else. So that's what's being asked of us. And that's where the Guru comes and says, you are a fool. So allowing yourself to be called a fool by the Guru, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And unfortunately, that's the process of spiritual life in any religion. I used to stay for quite some time in Christian monasteries. That's the process. Submission. Obedience. And it's not easy. It's not easy for intelligent people. You may think that obedience and submission is very easy for simple-hearted, simple-minded people who don't know very much and who live in third-world countries. And therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is really directed towards people who live in those sort of countries that don't know when they're being exploited. No. Think again. We're talking here of Madhvacharya. We're talking of Shankaracharya. We're talking of Ramanujacharya, the greatest Jiva Goswami, the greatest intellectuals of the day. People, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, people who are intimate associates of the leaders and thinkers and the greatest intellectuals of the day. So it is not something for fools who have nowhere else to go. This is something for people who can really be intelligent, who can really call upon deep down God-given intelligence. So this is what is required. And when we say Gopi Bhagato Parakamalayo Das Das Anudasa, we shouldn't think, well, you know, the gopis, they were simple cowherd girls and they believed in Krishna. But I'm quite smart. In fact, I'm smarter than the average cowherd girl, and therefore I have to look at this Krishna Lila with a, you know, with one good eye and one bad eye. Let me see how that's gonna work for me. But actual sharanam, actual Krishna sharanam means, you know what? I'm going to take shelter of Krishna today. This is a special day. This is Govardhan Lila. And I'm going to take shelter of this day by just making an experiment. That this day, I take shelter of this little boy. On the assumption, on the working assumption, that Krishna appears as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's it. In this world. Not just for people in another country. Not just for people 5,000 years ago. But that Krishna appeared and lifted the hill directly for me. Directly for me. And that Krishna is speaking to me now in 2012 through this Leela. And what does he want me to do? How do I take shelter of Krishna? And then, when that takes place in our life, we will have truly understood Govardhan Leela, and we will truly get the benefit that came to Indra. And the great benefit that came to Indra was forgiveness. 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 That is the most powerful thing in the universe, to be forgiven. Because the ultimate result of being forgiven is to experience spiritual ecstasy. Because are we not all Indra? Are we not all placing ourselves in the position where Krishna is subject to the scrutiny of our intelligence, our very powerful intelligence? We're all Indra, and we're all doing that. So we all have to not rain on Krishna, rain our intellectual assessment on Krishna, but to say, actually, Krishna is always more powerful than me. Krishna is the supreme center of the universe, not me. And this day, on this special day, I take shelter of Krishna. I give my life to Krishna. Whatever it was in the past, today is a new day. And from today, from this very day, I take shelter of Krishna. And then we will have the tears, we will have the shivering of the body, we will have the hair standing up on end, we will have the stunned, we will have the speechlessness, we will have everything that we read about in Shastra. Just try it. We just have to try it. It's a great experiment anyway. You're experimenting with your life. You're putting your life on the line to come to this Krishna consciousness movement. So if you've already done that, why not do it completely? Why not do it fully? Why be half-hearted? You see? So we have to go from Indra consciousness to Mahendra consciousness. From Indra to Mahendra. And in this way, we shall achieve everything that Krishna came and lifted the hill to give us. We should know when we are defeated. Prabhupada said, and I was sitting in the audience, he said, so, and he looked around at all of us 20-year-olds, he said, just give this one life to Krishna. And deep down, something inside me said, okay. It doesn't seem very long. It's not actually very long. I'm 56 now. I was 20. Actually, I was 19 at the time. He said, just give this one short life to Krishna. He said, you have so many thousands of lives in the past. He said, you will have so many thousands of lives in the future. But just one life, just a few short years, give it to Krishna. Give it to Krishna completely. And experiment. See what the result will be. Hare Krishna. So let's experiment. Let's see what the result will be. Just give this life to Krishna. Hare Krishna.